Good Weekend Talks is a new podcast from the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age.
It's a deep dive, once a week, into Australia's definitive stories.
On Good Weekend Talks,
we take a long-form look at the people,
places and issues
that matter to you.
Devour the issue in depth.
And learn the backstory and craft behind some of Good Weekend's most popular pieces.
It's your favourite magazine, brought to life for your ears, your heart and your soul.
Subscribe now, wherever you get your podcasts.
From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Thursday, April 2nd. For the duration of the COVID-19 crisis, Please Explain is coming to you 5 days a week. As of this afternoon, Australia had recorded 5,105 cases of coronavirus and 24 people have died. I'm joined now by the Sydney Morning Herald's health editor, Kate Orbison. Kate Orbison, welcome back to Please Explain. We have a lot to discuss today, but I wanted to start by asking you about a tour you did of a COVID-19 intensive care unit recently. Tell us about that.
Yeah, last week I went to COVID Red ICU, which is the COVID-specific intensive care unit at RPA Hospital in Camperdown. It was quite an experience. The staff were really preparing for what they're expecting to see come at them in the next weeks and months. I had to wash my hands several times with sanitizer before I made it into the donning and doffing area, which is where you put on all the personal protective equipment we've been hearing so much about. You've got a specialist nurse watching you do that to make sure you're completely safe. I did get the sense that it was the calm before the storm. There were a handful of patients in there. There were a lot of nurses and specialists there, fully covered in PPE, a lot of monitors, massive ventilators. I've never seen a ventilator before in person. They're huge machines. And these are the machines that are going to be saving the sickest patients, hopefully.
So I imagine there's no visitors allowed.
No visitors allowed. It's really sad, actually, when you think about the families of these patients who are scared, they're worried, and a lot of them can't visit because being close contacts of these patients, they're in self-isolation themselves. So the ICU actually tries to do a lot of stuff. They try and bring in sanitised iPads and so they can communicate if their family members are well enough to do that. But no, they're not allowed in. They've had to cut back on things like priest visits as well.
Kate, you had a story on the front page of the Sydney Morning Herald today about mobilising retired doctors and nurses and other health professionals. I would have thought most retired medical professionals were in the high-risk category for coronavirus. How's that going to work?
So it's recently retired. So it's people who no longer have a practicing registration for the last 3 years. And APRA, the Medical Practitioner Watchdog, has been very, very clear that they want practitioners to opt out of this. They call it a pandemic sub-register. If you have any condition or there's anything about you that makes you particularly at risk of COVID, and that includes older practitioners, they're leaving it at this stage up to the practitioners to decide whether they're fit and healthy enough to come back. And the other thing is that there'll be another layer of safeguard where the hospital or the health department and the employer will have to deem these people suitable to come to work. But it's essentially about getting as many people who are competent and have these essential skills back into the workforce. Some of them, they think there are about 40,000 at the moment, nurses, midwives, doctors and pharmacies that are part of this program. They won't be on COVID wards. They won't be in any kind of close proximity to these patients, but they could sort of do backfill positions that will allow those specialists currently in those positions to go into those COVID wards.
You talk about the calm before the storm and preparations like this, getting this register together, creating these red zone ICUs, making sure we've got all the equipment. It all feels a little bit surreal at the moment, given that at the numbers of people in intensive care in Australia is still relatively low. The people that you're talking about, the medical experts, how concerned are they that we are going to reach the point where all of this planning that we're doing is going to be necessary? Or is there a chance that hopefully, fingers crossed, some of it will be in vain?
Yeah, there is. Well, there's a chance that actually we won't have to use all of these processes and fail safes and worst case scenario plans we've got in place. I'm really hopeful that that's the case. I am having incredibly surreal conversations with people. I'm asking questions that I never thought would fall out of my mouth before. You know, how do you choose who will live and who will die? You know, do you expect to use all 97 ventilators at RPA at once for COVID patients? And the answer was yes. I mean, that's just unbelievable. I'm really hopeful, and I think that the frontline staff are hopeful they won't get to that stage. But some are scared, some are anxious, and some are just putting their heads down and making sure that everything is in place just in case that happens. And I think that's really what you have to do. The big concern, the really big concern for frontline staff at the moment is PPE, this personal protective equipment, making sure we have enough of it. We keep getting told there's a national stockpile. We keep getting told that there is enough. But these workers are really anxious, and we know that the high-level PPE, according to guidelines, shouldn't be used by staff on wards, shouldn't be used by healthcare workers going into people's homes to check up on people and look after them, that it's being rationed for confirmed and highly suspect cases of COVID. That's really concerning to healthcare workers when they don't know if the people that they're looking after might have COVID. And if you knock out one healthcare worker, if one healthcare worker comes into contact with a COVID patient and then tests positive, it has huge knock-on effects for the system, because then everyone they're in close contact with has to self-isolate. So you can really knock out entire healthcare teams.
How is the ambulance system holding up? Because they would often be the first port of call for someone who becomes ill and calls 000. How is that being triaged through the call centres and then ambulance people turning up not knowing whether or not they're going to a COVID case or just someone who has a bad flu?
If you're not at risk of dying or of, you know, losing a limb, don't call 000. You know, go call Health Direct, do something else. They're getting really weird calls. They're getting record numbers of calls for someone called because a bat flew into their window and they were worried that the family was now had coronavirus. Ambulance know that they're the first port of call. They're concerned that they're already really, really stretched just with our aging and rising population. So add COVID to the mix, add flu season to the mix, and they're really going to struggle. So they're doing things like they've got specialist teams of doctors in their call centre now that will triage suspect COVID calls. So, you know, does this person need an immediate ambulance paramedic response now, or, you know, can this person wait so we can get to those really serious cases? They're really stressing that, look, life and death, they'll get to you. But for anyone with less than a life or death problem, it may take ambulances longer than usual to get to you.
It's a big decision. It's a lot of responsibility on the public to make the right decision, isn't it? You know, normally your first instinct when something goes wrong is to call 000, but we're going to have to make that decision ourselves as to whether it's appropriate. I want to ask you about these ships that are sitting off our coastline, Kate, in Australian waters. We can leave the sort of national security army side of things to others, but how would it work? There's literally thousands of people on board these ships. Some of them may have coronavirus. The New South Wales authorities are talking about potentially dropping doctors on board to test thousands of people. How would that work? How do the tests work?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't think anyone really knows how that would work. I mean, Mick Fuller was even saying this is a huge operation. I don't think anything like this has been done before. They're going to need to take a whole lot of test kits onto these boats to test people when, you know, test kits still aren't an infinite resource. Mm. We still need to test a whole lot of people in Australia. We know that about a dozen people have come off these cruise ships in New South Wales for medical attention, and the police commissioners approving individually every one of them. Now, when you've got 9,000 people aboard a ship, that's not really a workable strategy. So there's going to have to be, if they are planning to test on ships, you know, are they going to triage? Are they only going to test symptomatic people? Are they going to test everyone? That's a huge amount of people. A bunch of them have the flags of convenience, which are the Caribbean, which means essentially that that's where they say that they're from. I mean, to send all of those people there is just, I don't think, an option at all, and I don't think anyone's considering it an option. I think Mick Fuller's right when he says, if you've got 9,000 people across 8 ships off the New South Wales coast, and all of those people were to come on land, on shore, worst case scenario, a lot of them are sick and symptomatic. That is going to overwhelm our healthcare system. You know, how much of a priority are they compared to the people, you know, already in New South Wales that need medical care?
Kate, all of us are hopeful that this calm before the storm that you're talking about just remains a relatively calm situation, and that we don't end up in horrific situation like we're seeing in the United States and Italy. But it's good to know that our health professionals are planning in the way that they are. And thank you for covering it for us. We will check back in with you as the situation develops.
Thanks very much.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Anu Hasbold and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team at The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald are working tirelessly at the moment to cover the COVID-19 crisis factually, fairly and comprehensively. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search, subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.